Hello and welcome to Podcast in the Woods. As always, I am your usually cranky co-host, Gabby, joined by my amazing and always really happy, annoyingly so host, Boomer. Hi, Booms. How are you?
Doing fantastic. Yeah, I'm gonna
Booms, do you want to know why I have the sing-song voice tonight?
I know exactly why, because I'm psychic. Or I'm just doing this.
The fuck out? Are you fucking kidding me right now? Okay, listen, everybody. Oh my God. Okay, first of all, we're very good friends. We've already met before. We've chatted before. We email back and forth sometimes because we're besties. And in honor of the fourth installment of the Hell House franchise, my absolute favorite, tears are developing. Swallow it down, Gabs. Okay. Hellas Origins, the Carmichael Manor. We have the
Yay. Hi guys. How's everyone doing tonight?
here today.
Well,
I'm doing pretty
we are hanging in
good.
there on the East Coast. We're powering through. I've got my beer and I'm ready to go. It is nice to meet you finally. I've heard a lot about
Finally.
you.
Yes. I was going to say at least one of you is crazy excited about this, but maybe two of you,
No, two
maybe.
of us.
Okay.
Gabby, can I tell the story? Can I tell the
This
story?
is Boom's excited. This is how he is. This is how we balance each other out.
Let's
Yeah.
hear it. Okay, so I gotta tell the story because so it's awesome. My first experience with Hell House, right? And I forget what year it was, but it was before it started getting a lot of the buzz. And I don't remember what streaming service it was on, but it was on some streaming service, and I was at
It was on
work.
Prime for years.
I was at work not doing anything, so I'm like, I've got time for a movie. And it was really late at night. I was working the night shift, and so it was kind of dark where I was, and I stumbled across a little movie called Hell House LLC. And Gabby and I've had this conversation before because our first film that we covered together was Hell House LLC. So,
Not really.
well,
As when I joined,
as a co-host, yes, okay. Technically, Boomer. No. Stumbled across this movie, little movie called Hell House LLC. I know that people give people so much shit for watching movies on their phone, but I'm at work, so cut me a break. But I was watching this movie, and at the time, you know how you have those seminal moments like in your horror history where something like really sticks out to you. And I had come to the point because the last movie to ever truly scare me was Ringu. I saw Ringu before I ever saw the remake, The Ring 2001. But I'd gone for years and years and years and was convinced that nothing would ever scare me again. I watched that on my phone. It's like, what, a little 5-inch screen. And I was fucking terrified
That's awesome.
during that movie. And it was one of those moments that just it reinvigorated my passion for horror. And I've always loved horror, and I always will. But it's like one of those things where it shows you that there is something that is new and something that will stick out to you. And there are still things that will scare you to, like, regardless of how old you are. Yeah, it was like the scene with the like ghost girl, and he does the like the blanket and stuff like that. I was just like, no. It was so good.
So
So
what you're saying is we're responsible for your reawakening of horror films.
like no joke, I've told the story in the past. Yeah, it's not just because
That's
you're here, but
amazing.
I'm very excited that you are. But yes.
We are not the only two, because that was my experience too, was that I love horror. I was at a place that I was like, I'll always love horror. It's entertaining, it's fun, but it's just not scary. Like, I'm a
Right.
little jaded, I'm a little older, like whatever. And then Hell House, and it was like, oh God, I can get scared.
Let me ask you
I
this
can get
question.
really
Which
scared.
one of you guys saw it first?
You.
No, I probably saw it first.
I saw it 2017, bitch.
I
I can
saw
tell
it.
you right now, I saw it on August 5th, 2017. It was the day of my baby shower.
I remember because you told us that you almost got like gave birth during one of the movies, right? Yeah.
The first one. Yeah. I was so scared. I wanted to leave the room, but I couldn't because I was pregnant out to here and I couldn't roll myself off of the couch to get up and leave. Yeah. It's terrible.
Yeah. I saw it actually in 2004. I had a dead zone moment. I was like, the clown is going to turn his head. No.
I've had my picture taken with the clown.
Yeah, I know. I'm jealous.
You should be. If anybody ever wondered why I
get. Was it the real clown? Did you have your picture taken with the real clown?
At Waldorf, yeah.
No, I meant the real clown.
That's not him?
Plays the clown.
No. That's not the real guy?
I'm the person who plays the clown. No, I play the clown.
You play the clown?
Yes, yes. Did you guys not know that? Okay,
no.
So a little history for you. So when Steve and I started work on Hell House and we were working on the film, basically, you know, the first time you're shooting these things, you know, Steve wants to test things out. We're kind of playing with things. So what you see in the final product and even what you see in the director's cut, there's so much more shit than we shot. There's so much more stuff. So like as an example, the scene with Paul with the little girl that you were just referencing, Boomer, that scene we shot with Paul and the clown, and then we shot it with Paul and the girl, and we tried it with the clown. It didn't work. We tried it with the girl. It worked better. So we did a lot of that throughout the shoot. So when we did a lot of the scenes, I think the clown's only in like three scenes in the first movie. And so basically when we did that, we didn't really have a person to play the clown. It was kind of like, all right, well, who's not in this scene? Let's throw something on someone. So I believe in the first movie, Danny Bellini and Jared Hacker, who play Alex and Tony, they both wore the clown suit, I think once each, and maybe one of them wore it twice. And, you know, it was kind of one of those things where it was like, just put this on. We need someone to wear this. You're not in the scene. Go for it. So, but then after the movie came out and the buzz and all that kind of stuff, we started getting a lot of like, oh, this clown is like one of the scariest things people have seen in a while. And you know, we read things. So we see, you know, the bad things. We also see the good things where people, you know, kind of say some nice things about us and, you know, putting us in the same world as Pennywise. So, you know, when Steve was writing the second one, he put more clown sequences in. And when we were doing the clown stuff, he was like, I need someone to play the clown. And he's like, do you want to do it? And I was like, yeah, of course. Like, why wouldn't I do it? And I always say this too. I have fun playing that character, not just because of all the stuff that I know about Halloween and Nick Castle and all the people who've played these types of masked characters before, because no one knows who they are. It gives me a lot of, you know, being independent and having these independent moments in cinema, you get to play a lot more than you would in the studio system. So you get to kind of try things. So there's a time when Steve would ask me to do something in a take and we'd do it. And then he'd ask me to do it again. And then we'd do like four or five takes. And then on the sixth take, I might just be like, it feels right to do something a little different and throw something different. And then he's like, I like that. Let's try this. So I always feel like I enjoy playing the clown because I like to fuck with people a lot. And so I was the clown in the entire second one. In the third one, I had to split clown duties with one of our production assistants, Johnny, because my character was a little bit bigger than he was in the previous films. And then, yeah, in the fourth one, back to me in the suit. So get ready.
We just got a preview of Carmichael Manor. Okay. So you were the original walking clown.
Technically.
So that iconic shot from Hell House 2.
The iconic
2,
shot is not me.
That's not you walking through the doorway.
So yes, that is me. So the what we consider the iconic shot is the shot with Paul going to the staircase and with him looking down the staircase and coming back and the clown's looking at him. That's our iconic shot.
Yeah. In the first one, that is probably one of the most frightening scenes, in my opinion, in horror history.
Right.
That it's so subtle and it's so effective and it's so just completely unnerving and out of left field. But the iconic that
you're talking about the hand. You're talking about the hallway?
When you've seen Hell House and you know how scary it is, and then you're like, okay, I got the balls. I'm watching too. I'm gonna do it. And that first shot of him, the clown, just walking past that doorway is just
I know what you're talking about. Yeah.
He moves forward. They're going to show him moving. Like, that right. is Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. That's when he's got some life to him. So yeah. Obviously Steve is credited with creating this character, but I like to think I gave him a little bit more life.
You brought him to life. Yeah, completely. And for those who don't know, Joe is not only an amazing producer, but also I didn't know until today, is the clown, but also has had roles in all three films. You were Jonathan in one.
Correct.
The only voice of reason in that entire movie.
I like to think so, yeah.
Yeah, my favorite.
Yeah.
Yeah, when people are like, well, who's your favorite character in Hell House? It's like, Jonathan. No, there was nobody named Jonathan. No, I swear to God. The cameraman's name was Jonathan.
You know what was interesting? So we just did an LA screening of in Beverly Hills of the first movie. It was hosted by the Happy Horror Time podcast. And it was myself and Ryan, who play Sarah, that were interviewed afterwards in front of the audience. And it was the first time I'd ever seen Hell House with an audience like myself. Like, because most of the time, the first two times, well, I saw it 100 times when we were in editing. But then once we did a screening, like a friends and family screening in New York, and when we did that, I couldn't make it in 2014 or so, or 2015. I couldn't make it, so I didn't get to see it on the screen. And then when it came out, obviously it's on streaming platforms, it's all over the place, so it's not really in theaters. So this was my first time that I actually got to see it in theaters and actually see the audience react to a lot of the stuff that Paul does and some of the creepy moments. And it was really cool to like witness that and see especially the humor parts of it. But yeah, I did not realize how much people connected with Jonathan in that final sequence. So that was nice to see.
Yeah, Jonathan is the only one that was like, hey, let's not do that.
Yep.
Like, and it's exactly what anybody would, I mean, speaking from actual personal experience, when I went to Waldorf and we met, my friend and I met the guys from Haunt Hunters who knew Angie.
Mm-hmm.
And when I explained, you know, what we were doing there, they were like, we can get you in. Do you want to go in the basement? And I was like, no,
no,
not at all. And even you and Steven were like, you want to see the basement? I was like, no.
It's the number one thing people ask us when they're there. They're like, can we see the basement?
Yeah. And well, Angie had said that to me the day that I had met you guys. Like, she said, like, we were talking, it was before you guys came out, and she was like, oh, you know, blah, blah, blah. And she goes, so, well, how do you know these guys, the Haunt Hunters? And I was like, I don't know, we just met them. They're very nice. They took us through, and all of the actors like kind of held back so I could actually walk through the sets. I stood at the foot of the stairs where the clown stood, and it was really neat, and it was so cool. And she goes, did they take you down in the basement? And I was like, I'm not going in the basement. And she goes, everybody wants to go in the basement. I go, no, I'm not.
You'll be okay. I promise. Nothing's going to happen to you down there.
Yeah. Famous last words. I'm good.
Like, wait a minute. I've seen this movie before.
Exactly. Yeah. No, I'm not a basement person anyway. So
fair enough.
But yeah, it is. Okay. So the last time we talked was, I think, 3 years ago.
Yeah, I think it was either 2019 or 20. It was probably 2019, because that was when The Lake of Fire came out.
Yeah, so we talked then, and even between then and now. So like, just while we were waiting tonight, Boomer and I were just kind of like reading articles to each other. And one of the articles that he read was top 10 found footage films of all time. And Hell House was what, number four?
I think it was number five, if I remember right.
Number five or number four. Yeah. And it's like, so between then and now, I mean, just the amount of...
I really, really love that. Not just because I have a soft spot for found footage films. And like, it always bugs me when somebody does that thing, like, oh, I don't like found footage films. Well, okay, well, what have you seen? You know, right. And it's, and you're right. You know, it's like, they'll name these two things.
Right.
And I'm like, I love the Blair Witch Project. I think that's a fucking masterpiece, but there are so many good things out there. And I love the fact that, yes, Hell House is written like so smartly, and it does things so well that it like kind of transcends like the genre a little bit, because I think that when found footage is when it's off, and there are bad films, obviously. I'm not saying there's not bad films, because right. there are, you know, and you just write a good movie and it's just told through the avenue of found footage. It works so well because it puts you like right.
Well, here's one of the here's one of the hardest things that I don't maybe people understand, but like the hardest thing about a found footage film is the hardest thing, number one, is why are these people filming? Like, it's any person who makes found footage movies will say the exact same thing. There's a point in every single script, in every single shoot, in everything. There will be a point where you're like, this makes no sense why this person still is holding a camera. And in some cases, logic wins out. And in some cases, it's like, fuck it, we'll just do this and hope that people will suspend some disbelief. There was the right amount of balance with that, with Hell House. And again, you know, tapping into, because there wasn't, it's not, again, there were a lot of found footage movies done, but there wasn't a lot of found footage movies done really well that people were talking about. And it doesn't hurt when you get people like in the horror genre to tweet about us or say things. Like, I know in like 2018 or so, Jason Blum of Blumhouse, he mentioned that Hell House is one of the best found footage movies he's ever seen. That didn't hurt, you know? I know this past year we retweeted Scott Derrickson, said that it's one of the top five best found footage movies, or best, yeah, I think he said top five best found footage movies or something like that. Like, that doesn't hurt when you have people who have millions of followers saying things about our little film. Like, that helps. So, and then you get those new viewers.
I imagine so. Let me ask this, because got the new, like Gabby mentioned, you have the newest in the franchise, Carmichael Manor, coming out October 30th on Shudder, which we are super excited about.
Oh my God.
Yeah. And we plan on doing a little spoiler free review on this show, but
it's just going to be me screaming and crying like an NSYNC concert.
Is it like an NSYNC concert?
Yeah, exactly.
Just like one of the teenage girls in the front row, just like, yeah, it's gonna be me.
You know, it's been a couple of years since the last one came out, since part three came out. What brought this one about? Was this always in the works, or is it because you're starting to get some of that the underground movement and some of that push?
No, I think, we recognize that for sure. And we obviously have a fucking awesome fan base of people that love these movies. And we hope we can keep making them for the rest of our lives. We may not, but we'll see where it goes. But basically, I think Steve's original plan had always been to write a trilogy. So that was what we saw. That was, you know, the first one, Abaddon Hotel and Lake of Fire. That was always what his original intention was. I think after that happened, we really kind of got the wheels turning with the Abaddon tapes. And the Abaddon tapes would have been the prequel series that we kind of developed to get, Steve and I developed together, and we were going to try to get made. The Abaddon tapes was not going to be something that was going to be made for as inexpensive as a lot of these films have been made. So it was something that we would have had a bigger budget. We would have had a bigger crew. We would have done things a little bit more. We would have had a little bit more money behind us so that we could maybe do a little bit more creative style of shooting, keeping a lot of the found footage element to it, but maybe get into a little bit of narrative storytelling. So we kind of put that together and we were trying to get it made. Unfortunately, we didn't have a lot of luck with that. And I think basically what we decided was, what if we took kind of elements of what we wanted to do with the Abaddon tapes and maybe make a series called Origins, where we can kind of go in any direction. And I think the decision, Steve obviously had the final say on this, but the decision was, we don't want to do a prequel like franchise. We don't want to move into a fourth film, a fifth film, a sixth film, and have it be prequels. We don't want to tell that kind of stuff. But part of the reason why we wanted more money to make a series was because the series is going to take place in the 70s and the 80s and the 90s. So it was going to have a lot of period pieces in it. And that costs a lot more than doing something in present day. So we wanted to make sure that when we were moving in the origins direction, we were telling original stories that had a tie to the past and had a tie to the Abaddon Hotel, because that's kind of where all the energy of this comes from. So that was very clear. And I know Steve's statement has been in a lot of publications and everything, basically saying, you know, this isn't a prequel, this isn't a continuation, this isn't what we were trying to do with the Abaddon tapes. This is kind of an original story that ties to the Abaddon Hotel. But if you never saw the first three, like if you saw the first three, there's a lot of stuff in there that ties to them and ties to that kind of, you know, everything that we built over the last kind of almost decade. But if you are a new person coming to it fresh, you can come to it fresh and not be completely clueless when you're watching this. So that's kind of like a fresh start. And yeah, I think, well, you guys tell us what you think after you say it.
Well, Dread Central, I think it was today or yesterday. It was yesterday.
Yep. Yes.
Published. Yeah. A clip.
Yeah. James Liddell, our Chase in the movie, he's getting all the clips dropping. They're all about him. So
yeah.
We had three leads in it. Bridget Parada, Destiny Brown, and James, and they were phenomenal to work with. And our whole cast was phenomenal. Our crew was phenomenal. But yeah, it really kind of, those three were the kind of focus of this new direction that we're going in. And I think it's going to be fun.
At about 10:30 this morning, sun shining, sitting on my front porch, I tried to watch the clip that was on Dread Central. I couldn't. I got freaked out.
You're too scared?
Yeah, because the one thing that I think that people, and Booms can attest to this, because I've done this, well, I did this on Horror Haven LLC, and I've done it on Podcast in the Woods. I will find a way, and I will manage to mention Hell House in every single episode. We're talking about like the one episode, we're talking about like One Cut of the Dead, a Korean horror comedy, or Japanese, was it Japanese, Booms?
Yes, Japanese.
Japanese horror comedy about zombies. And I'm like, yeah, Hell House LLC, by the way. Like I can figure out a way, and I plug it every single chance that I get. And it's so funny because we have friends that have podcasts too, that it's like, they're always asking Booms on to talk about this or that or whatever. And they're like, oh, and yeah. If Gabby wants to talk about Hell House, that's me. Yeah. And I'm always like, yeah, of course I do. But,
Well, we appreciate everything you said about us. Thank you. Thanks. I will say this, though. Sorry not to cut you off, but I will say this. I know you self-proclaimed yourself as our number one fan. There is a couple from Connecticut. They are the loveliest people. They traveled from Connecticut to Los Angeles to see the screening in LA. They've stayed in the house. They've slept in the basement. They've done a lot. So you might have some competition for that number one fan. You might have to share it with a couple folks, because they're doing a pretty good job of traveling and spreading the word of Hell House.
They donated $10 million.
$10 million. The next 12 Hell House movies will be funded by them.
Okay. Well, hello, couple from Connecticut. I would like to interview you, and I would like for us
Jennifer
to be best
and
friends.
Marcel.
Jennifer and Marcel, my name's Gabby. I think that we could be like the Hell House triumvirate, and we can just use our platforms. We can just talk about Hell House all day, every day. I think that that's what we should do. So Gabby at podcastinthewoods@gmail.com, email me and we can talk. I would love to connect you guys. Thank you. I would love that, actually. I tried to watch the clip this morning, and I was immediately reminded that it is so hard, because found footage personally for me is my favorite subgenre in horror, because when it's done right, it's done so effectively and so well. And I'm not saying this because you're sitting here looking at me. I'm saying this because you know how many times I've said how much I love these movies. It's just, you guys are so good at this. And what makes these movies so good is that you guys have managed to capture dread. And, you know, what's great about found footage is the fact that you can't see what a full camera setup would see. Like, what, you know, And so you're seeing what the cameraman is seeing. So it is your perspective is their perspective. And so that, if done correctly, automatically adds to the quality. But the way that you guys set up that dread and that suspense is just, it's so delicious, but it's so off-putting in such a good way that I was sitting outside in the sunshine and that clip on Dread Central, I was just like, no. I'll screen share with Boomer later. I cannot, because I know that I'm going to be scared because I know these movies. It's so like mind blowing that it can just keep getting done over and over and over and over again, but it still feels better and better and better and better. And every time you see it again, it's just better than the first time that you saw it. And of course, I told you before, I had to keep watching Hell House, the original. I had to keep watching that over and over and over again until I wasn't as affected by it, because I literally couldn't wake up in the middle of the night and go pee because I was so scared. But like, I can now. I'm a grown up now.
Good. I'm glad.
Yeah. And now that I have a 5-year-old who, you know, anybody who has a young child knows that there are nights that you wake up in the middle of the night and roll over and there's just a face in your face. And they'll say something creepy like, "Mommy, I had to leave my room because it was cold." And it's like, "Why was it cold? There's a ghost in there. What the fuck? Is there a clown in your corner?" You know, like, yeah. So like, you have to kind of become a grown up. So I have gotten to a point that like, I can get up and pee in the middle of the night. But there, every time I watch something new or I notice something new in the films, I am re-scared.
Yeah. And I mean, that's all Steve. That's Steve putting the breadcrumbs in there and making sure that he has a lot of these things that you can play out. I think the one thing that he always said and really wanted to make sure was that this is a movie that you can watch over and over again and get new things to it. So that's how he felt about the original. I feel like throughout the franchise, he's done a little bit more of that, different places. I think Hell House, the first one, definitely had a lot of that. It had a lot of those things, had things hidden in the corners and in the darkness and all that kind of stuff. That was always the intention, to make sure that you guys want to rewatch those things and be like, wait a second, I didn't see that before. That's creepy.
Just out of curiosity. So I had met you guys at Waldorf. Mm-hmm. And for anybody who's ever in Northeastern Pennsylvania during spooky season,
go to the Waldorf.
Go to Lee Heighton, PA, and go to the Waldorf. It is unbelievable.
One of the best haunted house attractions I've ever been to.
Ever.
Angie and her team do such an amazing job there. Oh, definitely. My gosh. This is the perfect time to go. So everyone who's listening to this, go there right now.
When you went back and you were like, okay, you know, because that was the whole thing, that there was a rumor that you guys were going to be there that night. And when I got there and I found an employee, I was like, are they here? And they were like, yeah, they're doing the walkthrough. Does it freak you out a little bit to walk through there as a spectator, like just as a regular person?
I'm trying to think. Remind me who was with us. Do you remember who was with us when we went there and did it?
It was you, Steven, your now wife.
Okay, so if it was with my wife, it was in 2021, not 2019. So yeah. So okay. So are we creeped out? Is that the question?
Yeah.
No. Not at all. No, honestly.
But I think it fun to like revisit?
100%. It's always fun because Angie does so many cool things with The Haunt. And like, even if you're not a Hell House fan, The Haunt is so great because there's a Michael Myers section, there's a Freddy Krueger section, she has got so much space on that land that she can dedicate sections of the cornfield, sections of the house to different franchises. So it's really a fun time. And I think one of the main reasons why Steve tries to go back every year because he lives in Pennsylvania. I don't get to go back as often as that. I hope, for me, it's like every 2 or 3 years. But basically, I think we like to go, A, to support Angie and support the team and see the folks out there. But B, we also want to see what she's done. So it's more of a getting to see, you know, what the house looks like, what's changed, all that kind of stuff. So it's really fun for us. I don't think, you know, up until that year, we hadn't really gone to see fans. And then that year when you came and a few other people were there, it was like, oh, okay, this is something bigger than this. Like, people want to talk to us. So it's always fun. Anything where we can be in front of our fans and we can talk to our fans directly and have conversations with people, and we're not hidden behind a screen or Twitter or whatever, or X or whatever it's called. That's always the best for us. So I think for me personally, I love talking with people and seeing what they found scary, what they want from these films. Like, the you know, talking to fans is always the best kind of like roadmap for what to do in the future. You know what I mean? Hearing what scared you, hearing how it scared you, hearing what terrifies you, like that kind of stuff that stays with us, so that when we're kind of planning other things, you know, not just Hell House, other projects too. Those are the things we're thinking about. So that's always the best part, but it definitely didn't creep us out. Cause I mean, I'm pretty sure, I know for a fact, I am not a believer in the supernatural. So that stuff doesn't, and you'll find most people who actually make these kinds of movies don't believe in it. And I don't think Steve does as well. I think Steve and I are both in the same boat where we're not really believers of it, but we know that it does scare people. So yeah, there's nothing really creepy about the stuff that we've done. And anytime we've shot any of these movies, even when we're doing these creepy sequences and shooting them or whatnot, there's 10 people, there's 12 people, there's 15 people around. So it's like Steve yells cut and everyone's laughing. So you know what I mean? Not to take away from the mystique of it, but yeah, I mean, we're, it's a family. We've been blessed so much to have really, really great casts and really great crews with us whenever we've done certain things together. So, so yeah, definitely not creeped out, but love seeing our fans.
Well, one last plug for Waldorf, just because I love it so much. Joe wasn't creeped out, but I will say that when we went, I took my girlfriend with me so that I wasn't just standing there like a dweeb with my little DVD to get signed. The corn maze was so scary that she had to be escorted out.
I remember that.
We had to ask for help. She had to be escorted out and walked to my car so she could take, it was a Valium or a Xanax or something that she had to put under her tongue.
That's funny.
To dissolve, like a fast dissolve.
By the way, you know, another thing just to kind of, I guess, beat a dead horse here is one of the other things that we really love too is like we shot the first movie in 2014. It's the end of 2023. So it's almost a decade now. When we go back, we get to see the people who were in the original and in the second and in the third. And the best, my favorite thing is Bailey, who is Angie's daughter, who played that character that Boomer mentioned before in that scene with Paul. When we met her, she was like a little girl. Like she was like a, you know, on the verge of being a teenager. Now she's in her 20s. Like we get to see her like grow up. So that's always awesome for us to see, you know, these people that kind of came out and worked on the film and now we're going to kind of get to see them grow up as we're making these movies. It's really cool. That's one of the things that I always thought was really awesome.
Yeah.
That is so neat. Well, yeah. And just for future reference, things that scare Gabby are vomit spiders. So if that makes it into some of the new ones down the road.
I'm with you on the spiders.
I am not afraid of vomit. I don't fucking like it. And I think it's unnecessary.
Fair.
I like it. But anyway.
It pisses me off.
Projectile, Hell House 5, projectile vomit everywhere. Exactly.
Yeah. And then in a year, I'm just like... Yay! Yeah.
All right. So just to make this as complicated as possible, because I do no research any time, and I just kind of like fly by the seat of my pants, and because a lot of the time, I don't view film exactly critically. It's like the emotions that it brings to me, and that's kind of how I review things. And so for those out there like me. Just tell the listeners exactly what it is that you do as a producer and like how you choose your projects to get involved in.
Sure. Yeah. So for those who do know me, know that I am a filmmaker. So that what a filmmaker is a filmmaker is usually the combination of a writer, director, and a producer. So the year that Steve and I made Hell House, that was the same year that I produced my first feature for Steve, which was Hell House. And then I wrote and direct my first feature. I've directed one other feature since then, which was a documentary about the making of the Paranormal Activity franchise called Unknown Dimension. But basically,
so good, by the way.
Thank you. But basically what I always tell people, the reason why I say I'm a filmmaker is because for me, I'm always about story. Story is always first. Like it doesn't matter what role I'm in. If I like something, I will want to be a part of it and I will want to tell those stories. Now, because of me being a writer director, most of the time, the things that I'm pitching and the things that I'm trying to get made are usually the things that I'm writing and directing. And I kind of, for a while, have always said to Steve, you know, I'm probably only going to produce things that you make. Like, I don't really want to kind of open shop and start producing other people's films and go down that path. Since then, I've changed that. I will do that. And I have, I do get a lot of projects sent to me. It's just, I'm really, really selective about what I do. I feel like Steve tapped into a found footage world. And you know, I Steve and I work really, really well together. We have a great working relationship. So I'll, you know, as long as he'll have me, I'll always work with him. But basically what a producer does or what a producer should do, because there's 19,000 different types of producers and it differs when you're in television versus film and so on and so forth. But basically on a film series, especially an indie film, the producer's job usually is combination of creative, combination of structure. So basically on the creative side, you're usually the number one person that the writer director is kind of coming to. In different scenarios, most of the time, the producer is usually the boss of the writer or the director. In this case, it's not that way because Steve created this himself. So in essence, Steve is my boss. But basically, usually a creative role for a producer is any types of notes, any types of things. So usually what Steve will do is he'll always send me the script. He'll always ask for my notes on them. Now, sometimes he takes those notes. Sometimes he doesn't take those notes. I think historically I'm known to be, I've said this in many podcasts and we talk about this all the time, but he calls me the logic police. Because I basically tell him when something doesn't make any fucking sense and no one would ever hold a camera there. And like I mentioned earlier, sometimes he's like, I agree with you. And sometimes he's like, I don't agree with you. But basically, one of my jobs is to offer creative advice when he needs it. That's in script writing, that's on set, that's in post-production, throughout. We have a revolving door where we'd be in a scene, he'd be shooting it. I'd be like, hey, why don't you try this? And he'll take that note or do it, or he won't. But basically that creative revolving door of kind of figuring out how things work. Like one of the things that I'm very proud of that we, you know, Steve and I worked really, really well on was the malfunction sequence in the original Hell House, because obviously we had about 150 extras. We had an ambulance, we had a fire truck, we had a lot of moving parts. And so basically we had our key actors, which were the main part of everything. And, you know, that's what Steve's priority is. That's what he has to focus on. So basically when that whole sequence happened, he was like, I got to work on this stuff. And I was like, great, I'll work on all of this other shit and we'll figure out a way to get this to make it look good. So that's where the structure part comes in as well, because I feel like my role on the Hell House movies is not only hiring the teams and bringing the people together, but also making sure that these people are good at their jobs, making sure they come together. And then when we're on set, I'm 100% that person that's like, you know, you hear about this in studio and unions and stuff like that, where, you know, the producer would never touch a sandbag or the producer would never do that. That's not me at all. Like, if I need to get bloody in a scene, if I need to throw a cloak on, if I need to be the clown, like, we're doing whatever we can to make it as scary as we possibly can and make sure that it's a good movie. So it's kind of like a jack of all trades kind of position. But, you know, there is the business end of it, because I am sort of the one that's responsible for making sure that every person gets contracted, gets brought on properly. And then I'm kind of Steve's number two in terms of anything creative, bouncing ideas off of me. And that goes from script all the way through until final delivery.
As Joe Bandelli, the man, how does it feel to be one of the best kept secrets in horror, that you held one of the best roles, if not the best, talking about number one, in all three movies of the Hell House trilogy, and you are also the clown? People don't know that. How does it feel to be like, oh my God, I love this guy. This guy.
Well, I will say this. This last year, I think Steve and I met a lot of people like at that screening and a few things that he did. And I think there are definitely times when we didn't realize the impact that the films have had on people. I went to Midsummer Scream, which is a convention in Long Beach, and our sales agent and partner Terror Films was there, and they had a booth there, and they had a mannequin and dressed him up like the clown. And I was like, do you guys want any help? And they were like, yeah, if you want to come help out. So I actually went as the clown and started walking around and like greeting people, and I was creeping people out. But basically
that's like a TikTok.
But when people found out, when people found out that it was me, like the producer underneath, like it was a cool experience for me, because I don't think, like you said, a lot of people know that. But I mean, it's very, I mean, listen, I've always said this, the film industry is a really difficult industry, not only because it's tough to get noticed, because you could have the perfect spark, the perfect cast, the perfect script, the best crew, the right amount of money, and make something and have it be phenomenal, and it'll never be seen. There is an element of who you know, and there's an element of luck that comes into play in every single thing that happens. And I think we are very fortunate that we did have a lot of those things that I just mentioned, but we also had a little bit of luck with the getting this out there, and we still do have luck with it continuing to grow and continuing to get out there. But on the same side of it is, I didn't get into the film industry for money or financial gain, and I didn't get into it for fame or anything like that. Unfortunately and fortunately, in this industry, other people determine your success based on how much money you've made and based on how famous you are. And I think for me, I've never really, you know, when you say those things about how, you know, I'm this character and the clown, I don't think of it that way. Like, I always think of it more in terms of like what I said previously, which is, I just want to do whatever I possibly can to make the best possible thing. So if that means I'm writing a script and I'm directing it, I want it to be the best story, and I want to surround myself with the best possible people that are going to help elevate it and make it even better than what I'm thinking of. If it's me in the role where I'm in on the Hell House franchise, I want to do everything I can to clear all the bullshit out of the way and make sure Steve has the right room to be creative. And if he needs anything, I'm there for him. So I think the best part about all of this is seeing that people like it, seeing people like you guys telling us stories about the first time you watched it and how much you enjoy it. That's always the best part for us, because I think at the end of the day, sure, money helps. It helps us make more things. Some form of fame and notoriety helps because it gives us more attention that gets us to make more things. But my goal in all of this has always been, I always want to make good stories. And I always want to just be able to continue to make films. And I've been able to do that. And Steve and I have been able to do that for a decade now. So hopefully we're able to continue to do that for multiple decades. But it's not, I don't think of it the way you said it. And sometimes, you know, when you say it, I'm like, oh, wow, that is sure. But then I just get back into the whole like, yeah. People like, I'm the producer. I'm the guy behind the camera that you hear my voice for 30 seconds. Like, no one's really saying, man, you're an icon, or like, no one's saying that stuff to me. And if they are, I think they're crazy.
So. Well, no, I just mean like the characters themselves, like every character, like 1, 2, 3, the characters that you played in all of them were relatable. They were probably the most relatable characters in each film.
I think that was purposeful. So the reason why I played those characters is because there were certain, I think, well, one, it was kind of a running joke between Steve and I to constantly play a cameraman and see, and it took years for people to realize that I was in all three of the movies. We didn't really even talk about it the first few years, but now we kind of do. But I think the reason why Steve put me in those, or wrote me into being those characters, first and foremost, is because of my technical background. So there's usually a reason in those sequences where something is happening, where we found out pretty quickly when we did Hell House 1, we found out pretty quickly that whenever we did sequences where the actors were holding the camera, it was so much better than when we were doing it with our cinematographer holding the camera. And not because of anything, our cinematographer, Brian was awesome on it, but it was just, you get more natural and organic stuff. And this is where found footage is better than narrative, is people forgive the out of focus, the shitty shot. They forgive that stuff because it's supposed to be someone that's not really good at using the camera. So I remember when we did the third Hell House, we had our cinematographer Carlos was on it, and he's phenomenal. And we had to, in essence, be like, you need to do it worse, or we need to have the actors do it. But basically, in every one of the movies, there's a sequence or there's something where it was a little bit more complicated to just hand to an actor and be like, you're going to shoot this scene. It was usually like, okay, this whole thing's going to take place, and we need to catch that corner and catch this thing and catch that. So the reason why I was in that role was because I was able to do that, because I can shoot and also throw my voice in and do all that kind of stuff. Now, in terms of the actual being relatable characters, like, that's just me. Like, I feel like every time we've done one of these things, I've said to Steve, okay, I'm going to change my facial hair. I know I may not be on camera, but I'm going to change how I look physically so that I look very different. So I have different facial hair and different hair every single time. And I'm kind of ethnically ambiguous, so no one really knows what I am. So I that was one. But I always said to him, and I always went at it from the approach of, I want to say the things that are the most natural to say. I want to say the things that if I'm in this situation as me, the person walking into this situation, how is it going to be organic and what's going to be natural? And obviously, if you're in a haunted house situation where people were killed, I'm not going to feel good about that. I don't think many people would feel good about that. So that was kind of always my thing, was play it as real as I possibly could play it. And luckily for the films, you have a lot of these characters that Steve's are writing that are like sleuths and detectives and people that want to get into these houses and do these things. So I feel like my job was always to be like, no, that's the dumbest thing. Why? Yeah. Why would you do that?
Yeah. And you were the reality. Yeah.
Yeah. So
amazing.
And that's yeah. But I don't think we ever were like, yeah, let's really work on this character and develop this guy with the camera. It was more of me and him just kind of playing with each other and having a little fun. And then just kind of me being like, I think it'd be funny if I did this or this might work. I also, just so you know, my style is horror comedy. So most of the things that I write kind of fall in that horror comedy world. So usually any chance I can, I try to put some humor in. Sometimes Steve's like, okay, we need to lose that, tone that back. But I'm usually trying to throw some type of humor in there.
We love horror comedy.
What's my motivation in this scene? So, all right. So when does the whole process actually become real? Like, you've completed something. Is it when filming wraps, or when you first see it? Or is it like as once the editing and, you know, the sound and everything is taken care of? And take us through those emotions. Like,
with the first one and the second one, it was completely different than what it was for the third and fourth. With the third and fourth, we already had a deal set up. So the second Steve started writing, it was like, this is real. Like, whatever Steve puts on the page, that's what we're making. So that was a very different thing. And it also, obviously, it comes with a lot more scrutiny, especially for me. I will say this, like, as much as Steve's really good at allowing me to give him my honest feedback, because my honest feedback and the type of person that I am, like, I'm a no bullshit person. So I'm a New Jersey, New Yorker by heart. So that's, you usually, what you see is what you get with me. And Steve is usually really good at taking my blunt and my directness. And not a lot of people would be happy with writing something and handing it to someone and having them shit all over it, which I tend to do at times. So, you know, I think not to say that it's bad. I think I just try to poke holes in every single possible thing that I could poke holes in. And so I think, like I said, with the third one and now the fourth one that's coming out, it was real from the start, because we knew, A, we have an audience, B, we have the finances, and C, we have a platform of where this is going out to. So it was like, this is happening no matter what. The first one was a little bit different, because with the first one, you know, I was embarking on going to write and direct my first feature. Steve was embarking on writing and directing his first feature. So it was a lot of, we both had made a lot of short films. We both felt like it was time for us to both step up to the next phase in our careers. And when he brought me on and felt like I was a good part to him, helping to make Hell House, he'd already written the script. He'd already met Angie and knew that we were going to shoot at the Waldorf. So it was more, I did give him notes and everything, but it was a different process than what it was for the second or for the third or for the fourth. When we made the first one, you know, Steve has always been optimistic about what the film could and couldn't do. And I think me just being the natural jaded person that I am, like, I think every time I go into a project, I'm going into it thinking, this is going to be the best possible story that we can make this, but there's a good chance that no one might ever see this movie. And I think it's kind of like a protective shell to, like, protect myself in case people don't see the movie. Then it's like, okay, cool, you knew this was going to happen. It's like, prepare for the worst, but kind of plan for the best, I guess. Prepare, what's the expression? You guys have the expression, right?
Yeah, it's like hope for the best, but
hope for the best, prepare expect for the
there
worst.
There you go. There you go. Yeah. So and I'm really good at that. I'm really good at preparing for the absolute worst case scenario. I think again, that's probably one of the reasons why Steve and I have a really good relationship, because I think when he's writing these stories and when he's coming up with these things, he's not necessarily thinking about the like worst case scenario. He's always thinking about the best case or a good scenario. And I'm the one coming in being like, well, this could happen, this could happen, this could happen, which as you can imagine could be frustrating. So again, I give Steve credit for working with someone that is like that.
Well, it could be, but it's a testament to both of you that he has the creativity to come up with the idea. You have the creativity to come in and be like, and he has the, what's the word I'm looking for? I don't want to say humility, flexibility. Yeah.
Flexibility,
I don't
want
to say humility.
Yeah.
That's wrong. The flexibility to be like, I think you're right.
And, I think
and
one of the things
comes out perfect.
Well, I don't think it comes out perfect, but thank you. One of the things I think I mentioned it a couple minutes ago, but I think if you're doing anything creative in the film industry is not created for one person to make one story and to get all the credit because they're the best and they're awesome. Every single film is a collaboration of a majority of people. I don't get to where I'm at without Steve doing his job. Steve doesn't get to where he's at without Angie doing her job. Like the movie doesn't get to where it gets to without the cast doing their job. Like it is a family. It is a group of people coming together and a group of creatives coming together to put something, you know, good out into the world. So I think one, if you're the smartest person in the room and Elon Musk says this, Steve Jobs used to say this, I think Bill Gates says this, but if you are literally the smartest person in the room and you know you're the smartest person in the room, you need to walk out of that room or you need to get new people around you, because you need to be elevated by the people around you and constantly challenged by the people around you, not being told, yes, you're doing everything right constantly. And I think that's that we have a little bit of that dynamic on set. And I think that really helps us get the best that we possibly can out of these movies.
You're right. Like, yeah, there's you and there's Steve and there's Angie and there's all of the people that go into making a film. It's not just two people and a cast.
Right.
But I think that like what I'm trying to say is, yeah, it takes a village for every film that's made. A lot of them are terrible. And every single one of these films. And I tried so hard. I couldn't find where to stream any of your films, the ones that you wrote and directed. I couldn't find where to stream those. I wanted to before They're today. Hidden. Bummer. That made me sad.
No, one's on Paramount Plus. And then the other one I just had pulled because I'm recutting it and releasing it in the next few months.
Okay, well, I don't know what I'm doing on Paramount Plus tomorrow. I agree with you, obviously, because I don't know enough about filmmaking to agree or disagree. But what I'm saying is, you know, I work like a quote unquote regular job. The worst employee is the one that's most unhappy with the management. So between you and Steven, that's what I'm saying is like the two of you, I feel like, especially when I spoke with you before, when I spoke with both of you, It's a great rapport. And it's very much, it seems to me to be very easy, very natural.
I mean, when you're working with someone for a decade or close to a decade, it gets kind of, you know, shorthand is definitely a thing. You kind of know.
I have coworkers that I've been with for 12 years that I cannot. She stays in her room. I stay in mine.
Hopefully they're not listening.
No.
I appreciate everything you're saying. And obviously, you know, we really want these things to be good and we try our best to do it. But, you know, you're right. There are bad things out there, but bad is so subjective. You know what I mean? There are people out there.
Yeah.
Again, we read these things. There are people out there that tell us Hell House 2 is one of the worst movies they had ever seen. So like we, you know, for every person that's saying something good about us, there's someone saying something bad about us as well. So it's very subjective.
How do you handle that?
I mean, I said, I'm prepared for the worst. So I'm always prepared that someone's going to come along. I feel like I've been living my entire life with imposter syndrome. Like, I feel like at some point someone's going to be like, wait, you don't know what you're doing. And I'm going to be like, shit, they found me out. Like I constantly feel that way, but I also know that I work my ass off on a lot of this stuff. So my thing is always like, well, if worst case scenario, if everything I do sucks, at least someone will be like, well, at least he works his ass off on making that thing suck. So that's how I handle it.
I'm a big documentary fan. Before we start to wrap up and do everything, I do want to say, when we spoke before, I think it was, if it was 2021, it was right before the documentary came out. I hadn't seen it yet. Obviously I've seen it since then. I love a documentary. You did a really good job. Did you know Oren Peli? Did you know anybody that had been involved in the films? Did you go into that as somebody who wanted to know more or as an actual fan? Like you were a fan of the Paranormal Activity movies or?
Right. Yeah. So I basically when we were shooting Hell House 3, my friend Anthony Massey, who's produced a lot of retrospective documentaries, he did the one on Friday the 13th. He did the one on, called Still Screaming about Scream. He did Halloween 20 years, I think, in like the early 2000s. He did a lot of, you know, retrospectives on big franchises. So him and I were friends or are friends, and he brought up to me that he was going to make a documentary about the making of the Paranormal Activity movies, because those are movies that never had any bonus features or never had any behind the scenes, because obviously they want people to feel like they're real. Yeah. And, you know, nowadays you see a Saw movie, you see Conjuring, there's a thousand things of behind the scenes of seeing the people in their makeup, without their makeup, all that kind of stuff. But for Paranormal Activity, never had any of that stuff. So he brought that up to me. And then I went to Pennsylvania to go shoot Hell House 3. And he brought up to me his friend, now my friend, Nate Reagan, who lives out in Pennsylvania. And he was like, hey, it's like, my buddy Nate's out there. He's worked on a couple of my films. If you guys need an extra hand, you know, reach out to him. And so I reached out to Nate and I asked him if he wanted to come out. And of course, when he came out, first thing he said was, can I see the basement? So he came out and, you know, when we got done, he was like, hey, he's like, would you be interested in directing the documentary? And I was like, well, I know Anthony's been kind of looking for directors. I'm like, I absolutely would be interested. Because I've always said, I think the best low budget horror movie ever made was John Carpenter's Halloween. And I think my favorite movie ever made was Wes Craven's Nightmare on Elm Street. And I think what Paranormal Activity did for found footage was what Wes Craven and Freddy Krueger did for slashers. Because I feel like when you're watching Halloween, it's okay, it's this girl's brother, it's in this town, it's this thing. It's, you can go and watch it, you could be terrified of the boogeyman, but then you go home to your house and you don't have to deal with that shit. And then when Nightmare on Elm Street came out, it was like, oh, but you have to go to sleep. Everyone has to go to sleep. And I think Paranormal Activity did the same thing. It took the concept of Blair Witch, which was great found footage concept, but it was in the woods. It was out there with these three people that went looking for it. Like, you can go home and go to sleep and don't have to worry about that shit. But then when Paranormal Activity came out, it was like, oh no, this is in your house. Like, this is in your safe haven. So I always felt Paranormal Activity was a very superior film because of that. And I always loved the fact that Oren Peli was not a filmmaker, and he kind of came from like a computer background. So I'd always been interested in it. Paranormal Activity is one of my favorite horror movies of all time. And so I just had a conversation with Nate, and I think he saw the passion. And then about 2 weeks after I got back, Anthony called me and he was like, wow, he's like, I did not expect you to just call Nate and ask him to come help you. And I was like, yeah, I was like, you said he's a good dude, why not? And he's like, also, he's like, I feel like shitty. He's like, I feel like I've been talking to you about this documentary, but I only thought that you wanted to direct a narrative. And I was like, no, I was like, I'm all about a good story. Like, if it's a good story, I want to work on it. And he said, okay, cool. I want to introduce you to Rachel, our other producer, Rachel Bolofsky, who runs Screamfest in LA. He's like, I want to introduce you to Rachel. And so basically Screamfest is the first festival that accepted Paranormal Activity. So Rachel knew Oren, and she knew Katie, and she knew Mika. So basically what they had told me before I met with them was, we're not going to take this to a studio. We're not going to try to get a distribution deal. We're basically going to go and interview Oren, Katie, and Mika. And Anthony said, usually things fall into place after that. So me being the, you know, I got to plan everything and be ready for everything, I was like, that okay, whatever. I'm just going to plan this as if I get can do whatever I want. So Anthony said, let's meet with Rachel. And I showed up to the meeting with like a 40-page outline and interview list of every single person that I wanted to interview, all my questions. I basically had everything laid out. And they were like, whoa, like, we didn't think you clearly care about this. And I was like, yeah, I was like, I do. So they hired me right away. And then the first part of it was awesome, because the first part of it, I got to spend like 8 hours with Oren interviewing him. I got to go to the original house. We interviewed him in the second house from the Paranormal Activity 2. And then I got to spend like 3 hours each with Katie and Mika, and all of them were phenomenal and so great to talk to. And then Anthony set up like a week of interviews and started reaching out to the casts of all the other films. And then it was like the cast of the fifth film, the one that Chris Landon directed, I forgot the name of it. But they all were like
marked ones.
Yeah. They were all like, we want to be a part of this. And basically one person led to the next. And then Chris Landon said he would do it. And then we got Jason Blum. And then there were a few people that said no. And then Jason was like, who said no? And I told him. And then the next day, all of those people said yes. So it was just like, it was really cool the way the whole thing happened. And then sure enough, you know, in this whole process organically, they announced the seventh movie. And then Paramount came to us and was like, hey, we want to buy this from you guys. And we want, you know, to put this whole thing together. So that was such a weird, like,
That had to have been an awesome ride, though.
I believed Anthony the entire time because he'd done this before, but like, I just never thought that was going to happen. It was crazy. It was crazy to see how just like one interview turned into four interviews, turned into 10 interviews, and just like people. Cause you know, I think normally when you're telling a story, a tell all about a film, there are people who had really good experiences on films, but then there's also people who had really bad experiences on films. And when you reach out to a plethora of people, there's going to be some of them that had bad experiences. And I think when we reached out to people and they had no idea who we were, I think the first thought was, who are these guys? What are they trying to do? And I think that was a lot of hesitation. So we got a lot of pushback or a lot of people that didn't want to be a part of it. But then I think once we started getting bigger names and people, and they started reaching out to other people and realizing that, oh no, we're trying to like do this film and this franchise justice, then they started saying yes, and everything started kind of falling in line. And that was just a cool organic process that was so much fun to do.
It was fun to watch too. I love all of that. I love seeing the behind the scenes, especially for something like Paranormal Activity. It was such a phenomenon, and it just happened. And it was just like, holy shit, what is this? This is amazing. And so to see, you know, kind of how it came about and the effects of it, because, you know, you, as a watcher, you saw the first one and you were like, oh my God. And then you saw the second one and you were like, holy shit. And then you saw the third one and you're like, oh my, this is insane. You know? So that's how we see it. But like, to see like what happens to go into all of it, that's
right.
It was really, really, really cool. When I first met you, you guys had been in PA for the filming of a movie
825 Forest Road. Yeah.
Was that code for Carmichael Mariner?
It was not. No. We are still in post-production on that. That movie is still going to come
out.
Are
you really?
Yes. So we're not 100%.
Oh, that makes me so happy.
We're not 100% sure on that. But that's Steve, myself, and then the folks over at Epic Level Entertainment that we are working on that. We had a couple of slowdowns during the pandemic and everything that kind of delayed some things. With a found footage movie, it's easier to put that together. It's easier to move through it. This is Steve's first narrative film. I think the hopes are either end of this year, maybe springtime of when this one's going to come out, but that is in the works still.
I had like one of those moments, like a holy shit moment earlier today, that I was like, because when I talked to you guys, you were like, yeah, Abaddon tapes.
Right.
And then later on it was announced Carmichael Manor. And it was like, I know from watching so many movie documentaries that a lot of movies are sent to theaters with a different name on the reel. So it's like,
We filmed in April, so we shot it this year. When Steve was casting it and putting casting notices out, he did not put it out as Hell House LLC Origins Carmichael Manor. It was just out as the Carmichael Manor. So the actors submitting to it didn't know that they were submitting to the Hell House franchise. They learned it as once they got the roles, they kind of figured it out as they got closer. I think they kind of knew, especially the ones that we brought on. I think they kind of knew when we got closer, when they got to like their second audition, they kind of put two and two together.
Wait,
that's really neat.
Booms, did we know that? Boomer's dream in life, his number one dream is to die in a horror movie.
Okay, you got you paused.
He doesn't even want
he doesn't even want to
speak. He just wants to be like wants to be killed in a horror movie. I don't know why. I think it was just one day we were watching something that was terrible and we were bored. And I was like scrolling through and I found a link for like, it was like, what's it called? It's not Back Pages. It's
Backstage.
Back Pages, I think I remember.
Yeah, I always say the wrong thing sometimes. I'm like, yeah, we put our post on Back Pages. Like, wait, no, we didn't. Backstage.
Yeah. But I had seen something and it said like, and I was like, what is this?
Yeah.
And I was like, Boobs, you gotta go for that. And he was like, I don't have a headshot. And I was like, shit.
By the way, Booms, that's like the number one thing that everyone tells us. Like I don't know about Steve, but for me, I have a laundry list of people who are like, I want to die in one of your movies.
Yeah, I know.
You want to hear something real fucked up?
What's that?
The first movie that I directed, I put myself in it because that's what I do. And I made sure that my character died first, and I made sure he died a really gruesome death. Because I wanted to see my mom's reaction to it.
That's funny.
I love that.
Is that fucked up?
That's kind of, but in a really cool, that's hilarious.
It was okay. Like she's watching it and I'm next to her. So it wasn't like, she knew I wasn't dead. But it was fucked up. Yeah. Us horror folks, we're fucked up.
Yeah, there's...
Booms, though, he got his consolation. Instead of getting to die with no dialogue, he got a speaking role.
In what?
That I can talk about it or anything like that. But yes, there's an independent kind of psychological horror film that should be coming out either at the end of this year or the beginning of next year. And I play the very pivotal role of bar patron. And I've got a couple of lines in that, and I'm in a few scenes. You know, I mean, it's a real stretch for me. I promise.
Shoot me an email once it comes out. I'll take a look.
Okay, I will. I sure will. But yeah, so I was so excited.
I like seeing people live their dreams. So I want to see you die.
I know. I don't get to die in this one. So I was so upset. Like I was telling the director, I'm like, listen, you don't have to pay me any extra. If it just happens that bar patron needs to kick the bucket, it's like I'll film scenes for free. I don't give a shit.
I have I met this guy in San Francisco, this guy, Michael. He's Australian, and he I met him a while years ago. I met him the same day that I met my wife, and he knew of me from our mutual friend, and basically that day we got hammered together, and he begged me because I did a zombie series like 10 years ago, and I have a couple zombie things that I'm kind of shopping around, and he was like, please, can I just get killed? Like, oh, he's like, I don't need to say words, just like opening scene, just the first person to die in one of your movies. And you could be the second person, because I promised that to Michael. So one day I'm going to make Michael's dream come true. And then after I make his dream come true, I'll make your dream come true.
It's so
much
funny.
Love. Yeah.
Our dreams are the complete opposite. Booms wants to die on film. And I'm just like, every filmmaker that we talked to, I mean, poor Harrison Smith, that poor guy, that we talked about, like, yeah, Booms just wants to die. He just wants to be in a film that he just gets killed. And then he's like, oh yeah. And he's like, you know, whatever. And I'm like, can I just come there and watch you do things? Can I just follow you around for a day? Can I just see what you do and what you guys talk about and like how you do what you do? And can I like ask questions? And he's like, yeah, I'll email you. Like, oh, I have the worst request, because I just want to go and be like, but I could never just go to observe. Like I talk too much and I have too much emotion that I would either like just start screaming and crying and just being like, ah! Or I would just be like, okay, so why did you have him stand over there? And why are you doing this in this room instead of that room? And why did you?
They'd be like, Gabby, come on down, watch this. And then 5 minutes later, they'd be like, maybe you should leave.
Security. Security.
Hey, Gabby, you know they got craft service over there. I heard you
it's
like bagels.
3 miles down the road.
You know, why don't you go to where we're shooting the next scene? It's over in Connecticut. Just go over that way and we'll find you.
We'll see you there.
Yeah. And my last before we get into the viewer question or the listener questions, I have made friends on Slasher, not friends, but I've had a few interactions with Brad Geisler from Terror Films.
Yep. Brad's a great guy. Love Brad.
Yeah. Yeah. He commented, of course, you know, when the Carmichael Manor trailer came out, of course I put it on all of our socials, including Slasher, and he like commented like, thanks for being a fan. And I was like, no, thank you.
Yeah, Brad cut the trailer. Brad
he made the trailer?
He did, yeah.
He did a really good job.
Yeah.
I'm gonna mess you up.
I don't think he takes public credit for that, but yeah, Brad was the brains behind the trailer.
I will have to watch the trailer because I never watched trailers before I watched the movies. I was like,
that's
go back
really
and watch
smart.
Them after.
I think that's really smart. I wish someone told me that a long time ago, because I hate when I watch a movie and when the scenes are in it, you're like, oh, I know what's going to happen. Like, I forgot what just came out recently. Well, I'll give you the best example. Halloween Ends. In every trailer was the fight with Jamie Lee Curtis and Michael Myers. And then when you see the movie and that's the only scene that they're in, you're like, wait, what? Like, I already saw this in the trailer 150 times. So, yeah, I just I should not see trailers before I see movies, because I'm pleasantly surprised. I didn't see Talk to Me, the
so
trailer.
Good.
I didn't see that before I saw the movie, and I was like, yeah. Holy shit, this movie is really fucking good.
Yeah. Now, I mean, sometimes it's unavoidable, and I never watch trailers, but I try to not watch trailers because yeah, I want to go in like as blind as possible.
Watch it on October 31st.
Yes, absolutely, it's a perfect Halloween gift.
So, Booms, darling, friend, co-host, all
listener
of
question.
These trailers that I send you, you're just like, yeah, that looks good. And you're
thumbnail. The thumbnail looks awesome.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. The thumbnail is fantastic.
We're going to have a conversation.
Well, I'm glad I could be the mediator for this.
Yeah, exactly.
This interaction here.
You know what? I'm not ready to end it. No. Okay. We do have a listener.
No, I'm kidding.
We do have a listener question that we want to get to. We've had we have a few of them, but BAD or at Nick's Form on Twitter. We will continue to say Twitter. Big supporter of the show, and so his wins out, and so we will ask his. He says, love and respect the Hell House movies. It's safe to say they're not big budget movies. Question, if you had a bigger budget, what would you have done differently in the films? Or would you ever remake Hell House as a big budget movie? Much love and thanks.
Well, thank you for the question. We appreciate the support and hopefully we don't disappoint in the future. No, we definitely would never remake Hell House. I mean, literally, I made a documentary about them talking about remaking Paranormal Activity and how stupid that idea was. Like, we would never do that. Like, Hell House is Hell House because of the way it was made. If we went ahead and just kind of redid the whole thing and put $10 million into it, it would be so much worse than what we actually have now. Like, it's so organic now that I don't think we would ever want to do that. What would change if we had a big budget? If we had a big budget, we would probably do a lot bigger sequences like The Malfunction. We'd probably do a lot more stuff like that, a lot of bigger things that scare a lot of people. And if we did have the money, we would go make the Abaddon tapes.
Kickstarter? No.
I was just going to say, did you need Podcast in the Woods to start the GoFundMe? Because we are more than happy.
I think both Steve and I are not, and there's no disrespect to, you know, crowdsourcing or funding and all that kind of stuff. We did that when we were making short films. I don't think either of us ever wants to ask another person that we know for money to do something.
Sure.
Yeah.
So
Yeah, I can't imagine. I mean, I have a child, so I mean, there are no depths to like pride. Like I would, right. I would do whatever I had to do, but I think a GoFundMe, I agree with you. I think that might be like my last resort. I could never, go to somebody and be like, excuse me, may I have some money, please? Like, I can't,
And the times we've done it, again, we haven't done it. Both of us haven't done it in like over a decade, but the times we had done it, usually the people who do it are, give you money are family, really close friends, or people who are filmmakers that want to turn around and have you do the exact same thing to them in 3 weeks or 3 months when they're making their movie. So, So not a fan. Get it? It works for some people, not me. But thanks for the question. Hopefully that was a good enough answer.
No, that was fantastic. Yeah, absolutely. Thank you for the question. And thank you for listening.
Do you have anything else, Booms?
I think we covered. I mean, yes, honestly, there's probably 10 more things that I can ask, but that's fine.
We'll save that for the next film.
Yeah.
We'll save it for the next one.
List for the next film.
Hell House Joe, 5, see you in hell. No.
Do you guys know I started writing I think the first time someone asked me for my autograph, like the first time for Hell House, I didn't know what to write. And like, usually I'm pretty witty and I come up with things. And I was like, what the fuck do I write on this? So I wrote, see you in hell, .. And I was like, that's the dumbest thing I could have ever come up with. And now I do it all the time.
That's amazing.
So on my director's cut DVD, I just have your signatures.
Yeah, I didn't write any. Yeah, it's either one of two things. It's either you're getting the signature or I'm writing something to you. And I feel like you were in panic mode. You were shaking. So I didn't know if you were going to have a heart attack or not.
I mean, well, and it was so funny because my friend who had the actual physical anxiety attack inside the corn maze, she did that fast dissolve thing under her tongue. So she was fine. And when we were going through the corn maze, I was fine. I was like, yeah, whatever. So then she's like all chill and she's like, whatever, who cares? I can't drive us home, whatever. Like I'm completely gone. And I'm like, okay. And I tried and I swear to God, as soon as we got through, I will never forget the exit, the big thing that you walked through to get out.
Right, the Waldorf Hotel thing.
Yeah, as soon as we walked around that corner to get out to the parking lot, my knees buckled and I fell to my knees in that parking lot. And I just started sobbing. And I was like, I looked up at my friend who was just stoned out of her mind and was just so calm. And she was like, looking down at me and she's like, you did great. And I was like, I totally held it together, right? And she's like, yeah, you did. And I was like, oh my God, I was so proud of myself. And then when I talked to you guys, you were like, yeah, you were shaking. I was like, oh yeah, you noticed that.
My wife was like, you need to be on her podcast. Like immediately, she's like, you need to be on her podcast. She's like, do whatever you guys can, but you need to be on that podcast.
The greatest sentence of my life was saying, oh yeah, I named my podcast after your movie, and Stephen going, oh, you have a podcast? Can we jump on? And I was like,
what?
No.
Like, yeah. Immediately just like somebody just like reached down my throat and just started pulling my ass out of my throat. Just like, oh my God.
I thought you were gonna say that your friend like looked down to you and said, I can drive.
No, actually we walked, she,
yeah, how did you handle, like, that
she peeled me off the ground, we got out, and as we walked up to the car she was like, do you care if I sit in the back seat because I'm gonna fall asleep? And I was like, I guess. And so I just drove the hour and 45 minutes home just like sobbing. I called my friend in Belgium.
Wow.
And which he's only 6 hours ahead. So it was like literally the middle of the night when we, like, it was like 5 a.m.
Right.
And it was a Sunday, and I just called, and he, like, I called seven times until he answered. And as soon as he answered, I was like, you would not believe it. And he was like, oh my God, you died. And I was like, no, it's just the greatest time. Yeah, it was a lot. Yeah. And my friend, she slept the entire time home, entire way home. But you know what? I got my comeuppance. I ate her beef jerky. So that's what you get.
That's what you get.
I love you, Carrie. But Joe, seriously, I cannot thank you enough to talk to you again. I absolutely adore you. You are just down to earth. You're real. You're, you know, everybody kind of gets in their head what you would think the makers of the most important film of your life would be. Like, you know, and like, any kind of filmmaker or any kind of, you know, anybody that's in the industry, we all kind of get in our heads like what they'll be like. And you are just, you're just so normal, and you're just so nice, and you're so smart. And it's just, it's such a treat to talk to you. Trying not to fangirl out and trying to be really serious with this, but I cannot express to you enough how much I appreciate talking to you again. And I hope to talk to you again in the future, along with Booms. And also, happy upcoming anniversary.
Thank you. Thank you for all of that. And honestly, I sound like a broken record because I say this all the time. We get to do the coolest job in the world because we have fans like you guys. So if we didn't have fans like you, we wouldn't have a job and we wouldn't be able to do this stuff. So I know a lot of times you guys will talk to us and be like, thank you for the stuff that you do. Well, thank you guys for watching and for talking about it and for championing it, because we make these films so that people like you enjoy them. And sometimes it hits and sometimes it misses. And obviously it hit with you guys. And you know, I will say this, hopefully I don't ever become a douchebag from any of this stuff, but but you guys have my email. Whenever you guys want to chat, I will come back gladly. And it was obviously a pleasure seeing you again, Gabby, and Boomer. It's an amazing experience meeting you. And yeah, good luck with the rest of the stuff on the podcast.
Thank you so much. Oh, yeah, it was so nice. It was so nice meeting you.
Yeah, absolutely.
Thank you so much. And please tell your wife, thank you so much for making you be on my podcast before.
I will.
Oh my gosh. Have a wonderful night. Happy Halloween.
Happy Halloween to you guys as well.
October 30th, on Shudder.
If you're in New York, IFC Center, October 24th with a Q&A with Stephen Cognetti. Check it out. They did sell out, and then they opened up more. So just saying. But if you can't.
I'm not that far from New York. I am not, but I am terrified.
If you can't, there's Shudder. There's also Shudder on the 30th.
Yes.
Or if you're in Colorado, if you're in Telluride on the 13th and the 14th, by all means, go see it then too.
Oh, tomorrow. Booms. What are you doing tomorrow? Let's just hop on that plane and
we'll take a trip to Telluride.
Which I've been to Silverton. I believe that was on the way to Telluride. So I kind of know how to get there.
Right. But you can't go any further west. That's the furthest you'll go.
That's the end of the earth.
Yeah.
Cool. Thank you guys. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Joe.
Thanks for staying up.
Thank you. October 30th on Shudder, Carmichael Manor, Hell House Origins. Oh my God. Thank you so much, Joe. Have a wonderful, wonderful, wonderful night.
Thank you guys. You too.
All right. Good night.
Bye-bye.